Blog Talk Radio.
All right, race fans, y'all know what time it is. It's Monday night. Another episode of Race Chat Live with Craig and Chris.
What's happening? Listen, before we get started, I got to tell you a little bit about what's going on up here in the Great Northeast. It is February 25th. I'm a little upset that Daniel Hemrick had a bad day yesterday, but we'll get to that in a minute. The winds have blown up here 75 miles an hour almost all day long.
Wow.
My house is mobile. I just hope it doesn't really become mobile.
75 mile an hour gust. That is no joke, race fans. That's some pretty strong winds. And you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, Craig. A 767 jet airliner reached up to 801 miles an hour on its trip following the jet stream. That the winds are so powerful up there that normally a jet travels around 525 miles an hour. Well, this was near breaking the sound barrier. And just imagine if you were on that flight there and it felt like you had some nitros or something in the back there.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. I can't wait.
So the weather has been crazy up there. Tell us, is it snow drifts? I mean, what's going on up there? Is it still snowing?
Yeah, we've got, they're saying blizzard-like conditions. It took me 50 minutes to drive into work this morning, and it's normally a 35-minute ride. It took me almost an hour to get home tonight. So...
Wow.
It's just that bad. But if I just told Dana that if I ever bitch about the heat this summer, she is to smack me around. Because I've had enough of the snow.
And he's talking and complaining about heat in northern New York, where we suffer here in Mississippi. We can handle the winter. they wear shorts in our winter up north, but in the south, buddy, when the temperatures reach about 107 degrees and it's 100% humidity, don't know what's any worse than that. It's really, and guys, we've turned into a swampland down here. I remember as a kid, a lot of swampland being around, when I was growing up and stuff and hunting in the woods and, over about 10, 15, 20 years, a lot of that swampland dried up. Guys, I'm seeing swampland now in places I hadn't seen since I was a kid. And it just shows, man, we've turned into a rainforest down here. Y'all are getting all the snow. We're getting mild temperatures and rain every day. It's really, the weather is about as predictable as the NASCAR races right now. Unpredictable. I mean, who could have predicted Atlanta, right? And all odds against Brad Keselowski, right?
The guy couldn't even finish
practice the day before. He was sick. He was in the campgrounds the day before on that Friday night giving out stuff and chilling with the fans. I almost wonder if he didn't maybe suffer some food poisoning or something to that effect. Because, guys, I've had the flu, and it definitely was not over in 24 hours.
No, but DW and Jeff Gordon said the same thing. When they were sick in the car, they didn't complain a whole lot about a car because they were worried about being sick.
Yeah, they were just trying to make it, right? And the focus level is beyond what anybody can imagine. You know, we've seen this with Denny Hamlin when he hurt his leg, right? Everybody said, "Oh, Denny's gonna—he's gonna wash out now that he's got his hurt leg." He went out there and won. We've seen it with Brad Keselowski when he first broke out. If you guys remember, he was up testing at a road course, slammed into the wall, broke his ankle, went out there and turned into a superstar, won the championship later on that year. If we can go back to Michael Jordan, the flu. in one of the championship ball games. We could also talk about Brett Favre, one of my favorite guys, with his father passing away. Goes out and throws the best football game he's ever had. There's something about the, you know, being under that kind of pressure. These guys learn how to prevail. And Brad Keselowski, if we were to be live right now and cameras on us, who would raise their hand when they thought Martin Truex Jr. was actually going to chase him down? I know I did.
Yeah, oh, I did. I thought for sure he would get him. And Truex was not a happy camper after the race.
Talk about the whiniest person in the garage.
Should we discuss that now or maybe later? I thought we were listening to Joey Logano.
Oh, my gosh. Martin Truex, you just wound up at the best team, you know, in NASCAR right now. I mean, considering performance-wise, you know, of course we would say Hendrick is the predominant garage there in the circuit, NASCAR circuit. But over the last few years, it's been Joe Gibbs Racing. It's like this guy can find anything to complain about. Lord have mercy. I hope they peeled the ends off his toast for breakfast. Jesus.
In two races, they got a first, a second, a third, and a second. I mean, what can you complain about?
What's there to complain about? Yeah, definitely. I know that the guy's probably a perfectionist, but, you know, Martin, what's going to happen when you're sitting in Jimmy Johnson's seat right now? Two laps down, guys. Jimmy Johnson was two laps down. Is Jimmy – we'll go with the first question here, and it's off cue, so we won't spend but a second on it. Is Jimmy Johnson realizing that he may not retain that factor that he carried for so many years? Can you guys see it? Because I can see the defeat in his eyes. I can, you know, it reminds me of the Cars movie where Kyle Petty's going through it, and he says to the character that played the 95, what's his name? He says, how do you know when to retire? And Kyle Petty says, they'll tell you when you retire. And I just feel like that's what's going on with Jimmy right now. Two laps down, guys. He was two laps down. He had that restart there. It looked like he was sitting in third or fourth or whatever, but he was actually two laps down and just ahead of the wave around traffic. That's about the only time Old Ally got into the sponsor shot throughout the whole race, guys.
Yeah, you know, they're going to have to do something. I mean, I'm not panicking yet. It's only the second. It's the second race of the year, so I'm not panicking yet. I think that if you're if we're you know 10 races in, now it's time to panic. But I still think that they're going to have a learning curve with Kevin. What's his name? His crew chief there.
Go ahead, Jason.
I was going to speak. I just said it's funny. I guarantee if we go back last year, listen to the beginning of the season, or I don't know necessarily our show, but almost every NASCAR show, if you go the year before and probably even go the year before that, it's always the same theme. What's going on with Jimmy Johnson? What's every year, this is how the season starts. And I'm laughing because here we go again. And we all know what happens about halfway to playoff time. They're kind of like LeBron when he's playing. You get about halfway in the season, okay, it's time to get things straightened up. Let's get on the ball. But we have this conversation at the beginning of every season. We talked about Hendrick and their woes, and we talk about Jimmy Johnson. And then next thing you know, we're at midseason, and all of a sudden we're talking about Hendrick, winning this race and Chase Elliott winning that race. And by the time we hit playoffs, we're all predicting whether or not Jimmy Johnson's now going to be in the Final Four. And I think we all put him in the Final Four last year, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember. But
yeah, we did.
Every year we do this. And so I'm sorry. I know I kept saying it's funny or something, but I'm laughing because this is the same conversation, I guarantee, for the last 3 years. Every show across the board, it don't matter what station they're on, we do this every year with Jimmy Johnson.
And he may have a point, Craig. He may have a valid point there. So I guess the question should be better tuned. Who's in the worst predicament right now? Is it Hendrick Motorsports or is it Jimmy Johnson? I think Jimmy Johnson's on the lower end of the heel. Hendrick will rebound, maybe not so much with Jimmy Johnson, but as Mr. CJ Sports just said, he's heard this a million times. Now, we did experience last year the lackluster performance, I should say, of Jimmy Johnson. He got us excited there at the Roval, but as you said, he was battling for a chance in the playoff spot there.
I mean,
so
you talk about this year. I understand we're a couple races in, but we also got to take. He's got a new crew chief. I mean, there's things. I agree with Craig. If we're talking 10 races in and we're seeing an issue and maybe things are not clicking, but we're two races in, and, I mean, Daytona was not his fault. He was plowed over going down pit road. What was he supposed to do? We're 10 races in and they're not clicking. Maybe we can have this conversation, but you got a new crew chief. I'm sure there's other new members. You're adjusting to whatever new rules this year. The cars are a little bit, there's a little bit different.
But you know what? CJ,
yeah.
Going back to what you just said, and I'm going to stop you right there, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I do.
Oh, yeah, no, go.
Everybody is getting used to their new rules package. So they can't use that as an excuse. They can no longer use it as an excuse. We got a new car. We ran that car for 36 races last year. The rules package, yes, to an extent, but everybody's got the same rules package.
Well, you
know,
but that's just one more thing on top of having a new crew chief and everything else. That
if I was Kevin Minard, I'd be scared to death right now because I could be another Lance McGrew. Literally, in about five races, everybody's going to be ready to fire the crew chief, and it could possibly be Jimmy. It could just be that he has now been defeated. We all wondered when Hulk Hogan was finally going to give it up to the next guy in line. We all wondered how Ric Flair would ever step aside. But, guys, we've watched it, and it just seems like the panic is set. It's there in his eyes. He's lost his crew chief. He's lost his sponsor. He's feeling like a stranger in his own home's bed. How many of y'all ever felt that way in this room?
I was just getting ready to say that. He agrees with me. Probably won't ever hear that again.
I'm sorry, no. What I'm saying is I agree with you on 10 races. I don't see the same thing. And I understand, Craig, everybody's got the same rule package and everything else, but I'm just saying that's just one, with the new crew chief and everything else he's got to adjust to. I know everybody's got to adjust to it, but that's just, you're not only are you adjusting to the new rule packages and whatever minor changes there have been, but you're also doing it with a different crew chief. Before, you and Chad Knaus were on the same wavelength, so you knew your talk, your lingo, everything, and how to adjust and make these adjustments. Now you're trying to do this with a new crew chief, and it's not the same. I mean, I'm not trying to make excuses, but We have this conversation beginning of every year. I'm not saying this necessarily us, but the NASCAR community. And mid-season on, it's a whole different tune. And this year's even a little bit more different because there's another factor thrown in there. That's just my opinion. I'm just.
No,
and you know what?
I
like to always be the say that I'm the first. I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to put it in focus. I'm going to make sure that there is hardly a prediction out there that I don't want to try to get first. I mean, it may be the competitor in me, but at the same time, I'll stand to the bet to this day that Kyle Larson goes to Hendrick. Now, I have thought about it, and I said, you know what? Kyle Larson would be better off at Stuart Haas, but for some reason, I have to stay with the bet that he'll wind up at Hendrick Motorsports. Back to Keselowski, because I said we weren't going to spend very much time on that. Back to Keselowski. We're saying it's too early in the season. How does this set him up for the rest of the season, guys? We've seen it happen before, okay? Somebody comes in, they win the Daytona 500, they win a race early, and then the struggle starts, and then the rolling starts, and then all of a sudden, it really wasn't the season that they prepared for. So with that being said, is this win significant enough, or does Penske still need to work a little bit harder and try to get some momentum going with that 2-22 car? Because both cars have ran very well. The last two races. Does this is this is this one of those that we said that the race season starts now, but because of this and it being so early, is his win very significant? I'll start with you.
It was weeks and weeks before he got his first win this year. Earlier tonight on Race Hub, they said, I believe it was Larry McReynolds, and he said that this time last year they were struggling. They got their win midsummer last year, and then he was in. Now, Paul Wolf can try new things that he may not have tried because he didn't have a W in the column and he didn't have a spot in the 16th to use a basketball right now.
And to your point, Craig, I want to throw this out there because this was my thought. We're doing away with restrictor plates. Now you get a tinker with Talladega because you don't got to worry about a win. You're already in, so you prepare yourself for that second run at Talladega later in the season when it matters more. That's where my significant help with the scheduling.
Well, you guys, I will go back to Kevin Harvick, okay? Because Kevin Harvick, of course, won this race last year. What we've seen with Kevin Harvick, the big three was established early. But as you guys noticed, what carried Harvick through the playoffs wasn't his performance in the playoffs. It was all the bonus points he racked up during the regular season. So it basically, when the four car become a test car to try to get the other cars into the chase, they lost focus somewhere with the four team, and they were never able to completely rebound from it. That's the kind of theory that I'm working with in this one. And being that Keselowski is a member of a three, you know, basically a four-party team, the focus at Team Penske will now be to get Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano, and, of course, Paul Menard into the playoffs. Does that take away from anything in his season, or does it actually help him? I think I've seen from both of you guys, and both of y'all have, you know, a tad bit different opinion. But I do see where, you know, they are given a chance. Like you said, a great point, Mr. CJ Sports, great point with the fact that Talladega, that's going to be one of those places where they can do something that nobody else does. You can basically throw that out there and say, okay, we're going to try this and we're going to try that because, guys, this is a throwaway race anyway. We're going to figure it out. We're already in the playoffs. You know, let's swing for the mountains.
Yeah, this whole restrictor plate thing.
Right. And here's Brett Keselowski, the winningest restrictor plate racer in Cup racing right now with, I believe, six wins. So it definitely could be a season starter. It could be, you know, it could be the sign of good things headed for the Penske number two Ford Mustang. But at the same time, guys, I kind of worry that now that, you know, he's in the playoffs, that the attention will focus to the other teams, and then he becomes kind of this test car as they're trying. Guys, you know as well as I do, the new rule package, engineers want as much data compiled as possible. I wouldn't be surprised if they went out there and ran 200-pound springs in the left-right and the sway bar jacked up 10 times what it should be just to see how the car reacts in certain situations. Of course, nowadays, our old crew chief, Steve Billmeyer, he would literally have to put that in the race car. Now the engineers can actually just simulate it through the computer. But any kind of lab data that they can get from these setups, of course, they're going to be wanting to write these notes.
Yeah, and they're gonna get Paul Wolf. They're gonna have to do something. You have to get the rest of the Penske team up to the level that they're used to running, because if not, Paul Menard's contract is a waste of time and money. Sponsors are not going to sit by. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's his daddy's company, for crying out Christmas. They don't want to lose money. They don't want to lose money, and that's what's going to happen. So they're going to have to get the other teams up to snuff. Go ahead, CJ.
Although I was kind of agreeing to your point. That was my biggest thing when the Keselowski win is I understand they're going to want to accumulate all the stage points and everything else. We know how important those points have become. But I just figured a race like Talladega where, yes, you're still wanting to win it, but with this new package or not having the restrictor plate anymore, you can play with things a little bit more because you're not so concentrated on getting into the playoffs. You're now more focused on the second run at Talladega to you know, help you with your championship run. It is more, but that's why I feel that yesterday's win was big. I think the first year they came out with that, your win, your end stuff, it really, the main reason is because Dale Jr. was the one that won the Daytona 500 that year, and that was the first thing out of his mouth is, I'm in. So that, it kind of, I was already, that was my first thought when the rule was made up, I didn't like it, and then the first person to win the race, the first thing out of his mouth, and I'm like, oh, God, I really hate this. And this whole point thing, and the way we got the stages now, that's really changed all that, because now, they're not so much we're worried about that one win and in and get to play around with all the rest of the races like they were at the beginning of this, how this went. I love that Monster and NASCAR did the whole stage and the points thing because now there's really no dicking around. Like, yeah, you can test something once, like the restrictor plate thing, but you want to accumulate all the points you can accumulate. And so...
Well, and that's both great points. Look, I've seen that the way Keselowski raced Logano, and I expect these two guys to race each other the whole year that way. And you know, they're teammates, but they set that aside. I was very impressed with how Keselowski did not back down with Logano when Logano passed him and regained the lead there. But I just asked everybody if they were expecting Martin Truex Jr. to chase Keselowski down there at the end, and of course, you know, there's nothing sweeter than the taste of victory, and so Keselowski wasn't going to give that position up. But I think what we just admitted was we had confidence in some passing going on here, right, guys? We've seen 26 lead changes throughout the race.
Yeah, no, lead changes were huge.
Yeah, big factor. The most lead changes since Talladega, which was, you know, that's kind of the style of racing that they were looking to be like. I think that the rule package so far is so good. Of course, Kurt Busch said it best. This is a track we go to one time. It's off the schedule for the rest of the year. The pavement, you know, is different than anything that they're going to race on from here on out. But, you know, at the same time, I feel like, guys, it was a great race. I was well entertained. You know, coming off the excitement of the Daytona 500, now we're in Atlanta, hot Atlanta. I don't know if I was more impressed with the rule package or the guys on Saturday racing in the rain.
Let me tell you what Saturday was crazy. It was foggy. It was everything.
I didn't get a chance to watch Saturday's. I recorded it. I just didn't get a chance to watch it. Here's what Steve O'Donnell said about Sunday's race at Atlanta. He said, "I saw a fairly entertaining race. I think we said going into this race we didn't know what to expect either." So they didn't. NASCAR didn't know what to expect when they implemented this rules package at Atlanta. That track hasn't been repaved since 98, I believe it is, 97. So there's 22 years of grit and grime and just junk on that track. It's coming apart. It wears tires out within 15 laps. So...
Isn't that what we want, though? I mean, some of the suspense was who's going to bust a right front tire? I mean, a right front tire.
Right.
Did you see those tires coming off the wheel well? They were blistered, guys.
Oh, and I'm not arguing the fact. I think, yes, that's what we all want. But NASCAR didn't know what to expect out of this. They said it was a fairly entertaining race. I enjoyed it. Chris, you enjoyed it. Jason was probably working.
Yep.
But That's what we want as fans. We don't want to follow the leader style race. And you didn't get that at Daytona, and you didn't get that. You didn't get that at Atlanta. You had
guys. I've seen
races.
Six wide at Atlanta on the, some of these restarts. It was crazy. I seen Kurt Busch take a hole that wasn't even there when he went for it. Okay, that hole just opened up. I seen things that got me real excited. And that's what NASCAR wanted to do. I can't wait to see what the ratings are, because I hope that the fans at home enjoyed it. I was also pretty impressed. You know, I think you made a statement about it, Craig, that the stands looked pretty empty. I'll be honest with you, Craig. They looked a little bit more full than what they have in the past, and that is very surprising considering the weather. But, guys, isn't this what we talked about? Either you're going backwards or you're going forwards. I think we may be going forward again. It's too early to call. Of course, I love to predict things, and I'm wrong 99% of the time. But on this one,
so you're in
it
the,
feels
you're
like we're getting warmer again. We're moving in the right direction. We're seeing better results.
All right, I want you guys to explain something to me. Lap 273, the caution flag flew for Truex. What was the deal with that? What was the deal with it? Was it shouldn't have been? He shouldn't have been penalized, but he was.
I'm not really sure. I may have missed that part.
Because I missed it.
I wish this would have been brought up in pre-show. That way I would have known to go check that out, because I had to cook dinner. So that might have been one of the times where I had walked away from it for a little bit. But I don't know. I don't know how I missed that. I mean, if it was one of those things where they were going under caution, then 9 times out of 10 I was either smoking a cigarette or, you know, during pit stops or something like that, or I was cooking the hot wings at the time, because we had hot wings.
All right. Here's what it is.
I must have missed that one.
Here's what it is. There was a late race penalty to the Joe Gibbs Racing 19 Toyota team. O'Donnell indicated that the pit road officiating trailer initially spotted a crew member over the pit wall too soon during Truex's final stop. A further review, manual review of the infraction was, inconclusive, and the penalty was retracted. It was a non-penalty, O'Donnell goes on to say, so it automatically goes to the penalty sheet, regardless of whether we override it or not, in the scoring tower. And that was one we couldn't confirm on the that on foot was that 1 foot was down via the camera angle. So we didn't make the call. Jason, did you hear anything more about this?
Uh-uh. Oh, sorry. My thing was over. No, I ain't hearing none of that. This, you saying this was the first I've heard of this.
Yeah, I didn't really see much of it either, but...
It sounds like NASCAR 2 weeks in a row threw a big team a break, right? Because Chase Elliott started on the outside at the Daytona 500, NASCAR chalked that one up, and then on this one, Truex, the idea that they were initialed a penalty and then it was retracted, you know, that's a tough break there, especially when the communication line goes to the tower that this penalty has occurred. So you know that's not too cool. And I'll be honest with you guys, I was sweating there at the end of the, since we're talking about penalties, when they said that they were checking underneath Keselowski's car with a flashlight. I'm not going to lie, guys. I was like, you know, I swore it'd be Harvick to first get busted, but, you know, he did clear tech. He did clear tech. I had to throw that prediction in there, you know. He did clear tech, and so they got to keep that win. But I was thinking to myself throughout all that was, if they took Keselowski's win away, would Penske still honor that win? Because that was a big deal with him, you know, Keselowski becoming the winningest driver ever at Penske Racing. The guy's going to get to drive around in a yellow helmet, I believe it is, a yellow helmet from now on. He as the winningest driver at Penske Racing. I mean, what an honor. And would, you know, we've talked earlier in the year, would there be an arrest assist beside a win if it got taken away? And I think Penske was the, you know, this was the perfect example of that could have happened if Keselowski had gotten thrown out. Penske may have still honored the win. I mean, why would you take it away from the driver, right? So, you know, I keep predicting stuff, and it gets close, but, you know, I mean, there we go. And the penalties, you know, I guess it is what it is, Craig. You know, NASCAR, their judgment call said that it was, shouldn't have been a penalty. I've seen some dirty pit row racing. I've seen some dirty pit row maneuvers this weekend in Atlanta. And some of it from Logano, some of it from Bowman. There was a lot of heated communication there on pit row. Of course, Ryan Preece's day got ruined on pit row. How about that?
Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah, I've seen it.
He, whose car was that?
That he it was the 52 of Cody. Where's Cody? Cody?
Cody where?
Oh.
Yeah. Somebody decided that they were going to, I believe it was Cody, decided
here comes
he was
Matt.
Stop
here
me.
Comes Matt.
Oh, no.
Here
was,
comes Matt.
No.
Dean Benedetto.
BJ McCloud.
B.J. McCloud.
Oh, it was B.J.
Stopped.
McCloud in the 52. Okay, my bad.
B.J. McCloud and his best friend, Bear. Oh, wrong guy. He stopped five or seven pits short of his stall because he didn't know where it was at. Now, I don't remember seeing it so sunny down there that the sun was shining in your eyes. The damn, it was pretty much cloudy all day. So, whether or not he knew exactly where it was.
It was beautiful and sunny all day. There was hardly a cloud in the sky.
I'm trying to help you now.
On Sunday.
Yeah. No.
But
I
anyway, so Ryan Preece took the fall for that, and you can see by the visor cam that he did look down at his gauges, and we all want to talk about the elite teams. Sometimes these cars are as close as they can be together. But guys, where Stuart Haas and Penske and Hendrick, where they're always going to get more is they're qualified position makers. A spotter should have been in his ear, guys. That was the first thing. I said, Preece is going to take the fall for this, but a spotter should have been in his ear saying that the 52, it's that spotter's job to stand up there on top of that tower all day long. He should have known that the 52 was going in his pit stop. That's why you are up there where you are, so that you can help that driver see things. Coming off pit road and coming on pit road is going to be a big deal this year, especially if the competition is closer and tighter. We're going to see more gambles. We're going to see more incidents. It's kind of weird, two races into the season, and we've had two major pit road incidents already.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, being the first one at Daytona with what we had mentioned earlier, the Tyler Reddick rolling into the back of Jimmy Johnson.
Everybody?
Yeah, I think Tyler got cut up on there a little bit, along with Ricky Stenhouse. And, you know, that was another big disappointment of the weekend. We seen Ricky up front on the pole. It seemed like he didn't have the speed to match for the race. But guys, let's talk about Ryan Newman. You know, Matt Kenseth, he left something at Roush this last time. And what he left was guidance. He left if Roush was going to listen to anybody, he was going to listen to Matt the Brat, okay? And I'm serious, guys, because Jack Roush is one of the coolest people in the garage, okay? But he's very loyal. You know, Mark Martin, Carl Edwards, Mark Martin was supposed to retire. And so that, you know, everybody wants to talk about that split up. Look, Roush loved him some Mark Martin, and nobody was happier when Martin was able to go out and you know, win a bunch of races after he left. Nobody was happier than Roush. I think Carl kind of broke his heart because he was willing to give him half the company almost. You know, equity in the Ford Motor Company. Carl Edwards left a lot on the table when he left Roush, but Matt Kenseth was one that he had groomed. He bought Robbie Reiser's Busch Series team and put, you know, put Kenseth in the car. And Robbie Reiser eventually become the president or the main, what is it called? The competition director at Roush Fenway Racing, right? So, you know, Matt, he left. Of course, I remember the interview where Roush says, yeah, Matt's decided to go to the dark side, meaning going to Toyota. What Matt was able to learn from Toyota and what he was able to experience, he was able to bring back and talk to the Cat in the Hat and say, look, this is what we need. This is what I'm used to. This is what I've seen for the last 4 years at Joe Gibbs' shop. We need this to be competitive. The results showed this weekend with Ryan Newman. Ryan Newman was up on that wheel. He was competitive. He walked away, he said, I felt more competitive in this car today than I have for the last few years at Richard Childress Racing. Is that an overboard statement, guys, or do you think Ryan Newman's onto something?
No, he could very well be onto something. I mean, we'll just have to see if his further races concrete what he's saying, or if he's just saying
if they can continue, right?
Right. If he's just saying it to make the old
guys
feel good.
There's plenty of evidence from last year as Matt was closing out the year in the sixth car. There's plenty of evidence that Roush Fenway was heading in a better direction based off of the things. And now they had all winter to work it over. Newman's been competitive in the last two races. Is it far-fetched to believe that he may be considered a threat at Las Vegas?
Anybody's a threat if the Bush brothers aren't in the race. I mean,
well, if you think Kyle Busch is going to go for a three-peat this weekend, raise your hand and we'll take note later, because I can't see if your hands are raised. You'll just have to text me. I mean, really, he's going to go for a three-peat this weekend, and you know, Kyle Busch.
That was brought up. I know this is. I'm curious your guys' stand on it, because there's nothing worse to me than sitting there watching someone. And I love Kyle Busch. I just pulled out a collector's card that I had bought for $50. Like, I forgot that I had. Well, I forgot where it was at, so I pulled it out and everything else. Like, I'm a Kyle Busch fan, but there's nothing worse than sitting here and watching this man just dominate, get sent to the rear of the field, past every bull, by everybody, and dominate the race. Like, I'm sorry, but that's not entertaining to me. And my question to you guys, where you stand, is do you guys mind the Cup guys coming and doing Xfinity in the truck races? I mean, they made a big deal about him passing Ron Hornaday this weekend also in the truck series. And it doesn't impress me because, like, you have the best equipment and you're a Cup guy. Like, and I'm a Kyle Busch fan, so I understand the purpose behind why. I think those days are behind us now. I think that there is enough talent because of the next program and the Drive for Diversity program and everything else, where now we have not just a bunch of white guys out there. We have every race and females out there. We have plenty of talent. And with these cable companies broadcasting the K&N and the ARCA series races, there's more and more exposure, and so we're getting to see more and more talent. This talent's always been there. Just we didn't know how to tap into the resources and how to make all what we got now possible. Now we have the future already, and your Christopher Bells and Ben Rhodes and all these young, like, there's plenty of talents. We don't necessarily need the Cup guys on Fridays and Saturdays anymore. I know once upon a time, yes, if they wouldn't have been racing, people wouldn't have showed up because NASCAR was horrible at recruiting drivers, and for whatever reason, we went through a batch of a bunch of nobodies that raced anymore, and it was just bad. And I understand
who
why.
Who could run with Kyle Busch this past weekend in the truck series, though? Nobody. The guy come from the back to the front like three different times.
So,
you know,
he
would ride the high side and pass seven cars. It was, you know, he out-throttled them. He did everything. Look, what it does is it schools these little guys, and it shows just how good Kyle is and just how far these guys that are racing the Truck Series full-time and racing the Xfinity Series full-time, they see just how far off they are from being it. Kyle Busch is not going to be the last guy to take advantage of the 5-race deal, or the 10-race deal, whatever it is that they have for the lower series. And now that NASCAR's restricted it so that you can't have Kyle Busch running out there every weekend, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with Kyle getting 5 wins at a time. I'm okay with Eric Jones.
Going to Kyle Busch, then you'll have 5 going to Eric Jones, then you'll have 5 going to Keselowski when he comes down, you'll have 5 going to Harvick. And so unless it's a race that is a non-cup race, you know, they're not allowed to race or this is, you know, standalone, most of those races, they're still dominated by cup guys because you just got Kyle Larson now that he's got his 5 races and Logano. Like I said, I understand the purpose of it, but to watch Kyle Busch and be a Kyle Busch fan,
the two winningest drivers last year in Xfinity were Christopher Bell and Justin Allgaier. Justin Allgaier, a former cup driver, a guy with plenty of experience, put that joker in victory lane. More times than anybody in the field, and Christopher Bell was second in wins, and Christopher Bell is the next big thing. So, you know, you're always going to have that separation. Tell me any other driver that won multiple races that was a regular Xfinity race driver. You know, they've got to beat somebody, and sometimes it just doesn't really matter that Kyle Busch goes out there and puts a whooping on them, or Keselowski even. You know, I think that's part of the interest. When you go to see a monster truck, the first thing you want to know is Gravedigger there. When you go to, like a wrestling, you want to make sure that The Rock or John Cena or somebody's going to be there. You know, you don't want to go to somebody to a wrestling match that you don't even know anybody, you know. In other words, some of the amateurs.
Chris?
Yes?
I'm old school. I go looking for Bigfoot. Like, those are my days. That big blue Ford. I'm before Gravedigger.
You know, the Hot Wheels has brought the Bigfoot back. Hot Wheels and Monster Truck are now two separate entities, and Monster Jam and Hot Wheels are now separated. And there's a legal issue going on with the Monster Trucks that were made by Mattel. There has been a split between those two. Hot Wheels has created their own Monster Truck series, and so right now, you know, it's kind of up in the air. Bigfoot is actually will be a full-time competitor and is a full-time competitor in the Hot Wheels Mattel series. So Bigfoot is coming back. No more Blue Thunder on Monster Jam. You know, you actually have the real Bigfoot over here with the Hot Wheels. So I'm there with you. I remember when the Monster Truck show was the show, and the tractor pull and the motorcycles were just the sideshow, the feel filler.
Yep. Oh,
yep. So you know, it was a great race, and further to the point, like I said, with Allgaier and Christopher Bell, those guys, they're going to win. When you think about the trucks, you think about you got to go through Johnny Sauter and Matt Crafton. Matt Crafton's had a rough couple of years, but nowadays it seems like you have to go through Johnny Sauter. Well, who did that last year? Brett Moffitt did, and what, you know, Brett was able to win a championship. But every weekend,
their
goals are going to be set to beat one certain person that's running the series, and then one person that's maybe a celebrity race car driver in their series.
I would like to know what the percentage is of races last year that there were cup drivers in, because I know some of them, they didn't have any cup drivers. And in the cup races that the cup guys participated in, how many were won by cup drivers? I'd love to know that number, because that number right there would help me better decide whether or not I like the current way or not, but I just don't like it. Like,
definitely, we would need stats for that. We'll try to get those numbers there, because I guarantee you, if we do last year's numbers and the year before's numbers, we're going to see a major improvement in that percentage-wise, because I think, you know, 2 years ago when they were just discussing this, wasn't it Elliott Sadler who couldn't seem to get the win? I can't really remember a multiple race winner from the Xfinity series longer than 2 years ago. Most of the time, all the races were dominated by a cup driver. At least now in the playoff system, in the last 10 races, there is no cup drivers in those races.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to see a lot of victories last year. I think more than or right at half the races were won by an Xfinity regular. So they're still going to have to race somebody. You know what? I foresee this is what we've been waiting on for the last 2 years, and I know we have on Race Chat Live and Racing with Big Sweat. How close or when Kyle Busch gets that 200th win. And so, guys, it's inevitable. He's going to probably get the 200 win probably in the next few weeks. Could speed things up real quick if he were to go for a three-peat this weekend in Las Vegas, of course. But, you know, he's inching a little bit closer. NASCAR's probably not ever going to give another driver a chance to get to 200 wins in all three series. This is, you know, he was the game changer, guys. He was the one that come in and you know, the rule changer, the tuck rule for Brady. The best superstars always have a way of changing the game. Remember in baseball, Mr. CJ Sports, where Pete Rose could come out of third base and lay the catcher out? Where's that in baseball anymore? You know, why? Because they had to protect the athlete. They had to protect the star. You know, Mike Piazza's career was cut short. Why? Because he got run into too many damn times.
It's been, God, it's God. Oh.
Yeah, it just changes. Superstars change the geographics of any sport. LeBron James, perfect example. He changed free agency in NBA. You know, Tom Brady changed the quarterbacks from getting hit. You know, each superstar comes in, and whether we want to admit it or not, they change the geographic background of the sport. Kyle Busch changed NASCAR because why? People weren't bitching when Mark Martin was going out there winning races in the Winn-Dixie car. People weren't bitching when Carl Edwards was going out there winning in the 60 car. But the moment Kyle Busch started winning a whole lot of races and started adding to this 200 win total, that's when fans got upset and they said, "Hey, we don't want to see this anymore." That's one certain athlete changing the geographic of the sport.
See, what I mean, because I'm a Kyle Busch fan, it has nothing even to do with that. And to me, the difference is, and I agree everything you say. I'm just the only difference to me on it.
Of
though,
course, you agree
makes,
because I'm right.
This is what makes the difference to me, and why it didn't bother me then, and I don't like seeing it now, is because back then I don't think the talents. We didn't have as many talented drivers. You got to admit, it's our ARCA series, our K&N series. Where we have a field full of drivers that could be cup, if there was a spot, they could be in the 500. But that, you know, some of these drivers, they're stuck where they're at because there's no room to go. I mean, we have a really good farm system when it comes to NASCAR and all these different levels and programs and everything. And I think that is the difference why it didn't bother me then, because we needed the cup guys to fill the fields because there just wasn't as many talented drivers versus now. I don't need Kyle Busch out there because that Xfinity series or that truck series is full of talent and drivers that, you know, we got drivers that are not getting an opportunity. I know like Kyle Busch, he's own trucks, you know, whole different story. And I don't mind him doing it with his own truck. But
Craig, let's bring Craig Moore into the fold because this is where I believe that, yes, we have created a farm system now. But you go back and you look at Jeff Gordon in the Busch series, okay? You go back and look at Jimmy Johnson in the Busch series. You go back and look at Ryan Newman in the Busch series. You go back and look at Casey Kane in the Busch series. You go back and look, Greg Biffle, he won a couple of championships. He never was successful at the top level. You know, Jeff Gordon won, what, two or three Busch races before he was put into the 24 car? Jimmy Johnson, did he win one race in the Busch series before he wound up in Cup? Sometimes that breeding ground, that farm system hasn't been needed in NASCAR because, you know, like Casey Kane. I don't remember Casey Kane's Busch Series career, do you? And most of the time, you know why we don't remember him? It's because there was a cup guy out there winning all the races then. Very rarely throughout history have we had, you know, first of all, the truck series is only, what, 30 years old? No, not even 30 years old, 25 years old, 20 years old? I think 25 years old, somewhere in the mid-90s, the truck series come about. So, you know, you had Mike Skinner, but Mike Skinner, he raced how many years? Is 4 or 5 years consecutively in the Truck Series before he got to Cup. But yet there were other drivers like Kurt Busch. You didn't hear about Kurt Busch before he became a Cup driver, did you?
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting more exposure now in the K&N series and the ARCA series. You know,
yep.
Bobby Gearhart has been in ARCA for 30-plus years. His chance to go Cup never happened. You know, I think he's raced a couple of races, but you know, he's mainly just known as a restrictor guy, restrictor plate specialist. But at the same time, now that we have this kind of breeding ground, this farm system, you know, there's gonna be guys who, you know, go through it pretty fast. William Byron, he is the first guy since Greg Biffler, since Martin Truex Jr., or Matt Kenseth, that actually went through the farm system. He went through all the series before he got to where he is today. It may have been just 1 year in each one, but we didn't see Chase Elliott run the trucks full time, did we? No, he went straight to the Xfinity series out of late models, and then all of a sudden he was on the circuit.
Didn't both
Craig, do you think that the
wrong?
Farm system is going to breed the next drivers, or do you see, you know, a clear cut path for people to kind of just skip that? What's your thoughts on that, Craig? Craig? I wondered why he was so quiet, Mr. CJ Sports. Is he gone?
Sorry, I had myself on mute.
Oh, he was on mute. Okay.
They've got to breed it. The Xfinity Series, Bush, whatever you want to call it. You're going to breed their drivers. You're going to get somebody like a William Byron. Like you just said, he only did one season in each. But he did well in each of those seasons. So that's why they moved him up. You just can't bring somebody in here, and I'm probably gonna catch hell for this. But if Danica had spent more time in the Xfinity series or the Busch series as it was then, she probably would have been a better Cup Series driver.
The more experience in the stock car, definitely the better off you would be.
I mean, she had no seat. She had no real seat time. And I think that was their way of saying, hey, we need to bring notoriety to the top series. We don't give two shits if she's got enough seat time or how many cars she's going to crash.
If seat time really mattered, Craig Moore, wouldn't Jennifer Jo Cobb already be in a Cup ride? Because Jennifer Jo Cobb has been around longer than I think any female in racing. She has. She's been around since Shauna Robinson, and Danica Patrick has spent what seven years in NASCAR. So Jennifer Jo Cobb has been there twice as long as what Danica's been in racing, but yet she hasn't gotten the chance to race in Cup or on a weekly, you know, basis. Basically, Jennifer Jo Cobb runs her own race team. That's why she's at the racetrack every weekend. If it wasn't for her running her own team, we probably wouldn't know who Jennifer Jo Cobb is.
Exactly. So they've got to breed them in the Xfinity series. They got to start them off K&N, Wheel and Modified, K&N, ARCA, you know, and then up to the trucks, Xfinity, and then up to Cup. Nobody wants to wait 8 years to get promoted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you can't be at the top of your game if you're doing it for 6 months. I'll give you a prime example. I've had people say to me, well, you don't play at big venues. You don't DJ at big venues. Well, first off, I don't want to DJ at real big venues. But if I did, I have the ability. I wouldn't be able to do that back 5 years ago when I started. Same thing. You can't jump into Monster Energy Cup Series ride without having the experience of years of training. Going up and working your way up to the
Joey Logano is a perfect example, right?
You know,
we knew a few years before he blossomed at Penske that that Joey was very talented. Wasn't that he was putting results at the cup level, but you would watch him race and beat Kyle Busch and matching equipment, you know, at certain races, and you would see those glimpses of a future champion.
Yeah.
Of course, it took him a while to define those skills. Keselowski, another guy that we watched work his way through the ranks, an original truck driver, went to Xfinity, got him a win out there at Talladega 10 years ago in October, and sent him on a total different, you know, different level. He, you know, within 3 years, he was a cup champion as well. You know, and then other guys that we've seen, like Gary Gauding, who never really blossomed. I remember hearing about Bubba Wallace Jr., or Darrell Wallace Jr. is what they called him at the time, back in the early, you know, 2010, 2009, right? Who's this kid with three significant names of racing? Is that even his real name, Darrell Wallace Jr.? Are you serious? Like, we heard that name coming up, you know, years before he ever become where he is today. But then you've got somebody like Eric Jones, and within 5 years, he's on the scene. He's up at the cup level. Throughout time, we've seen that if they take their time to work their way through the ranks, they are more than likely to be successful. Only a few of them that are rushed into the cup scene actually become champions. Joey Logano, speaking of, you know, he's probably that one guy that you just knew he had talent, but he kept working and kept working, and then getting fired at JGR put a chip on his shoulder, and the kid's gone out there and showed us what he can do. Now, you know, he's not a very well-liked driver either, though.
Well, but you want to
neither
be liked.
Neither is Keselowski. Beavis and Butthead, right?
Yeah. Do you want to be liked, or do you want to win races?
Obviously, the way those two guys raced each other, they want to win races. They don't even care if they like each other when they're in a race car. That's a racer, guys. That's what we want to see out there on the track. People give hell to Kyle Busch. People give hell to Brad Keselowski, Joey Logano. But guess what, guys? We're looking at winners. They're winners. They don't like losing. Why do you
now,
think
here,
Keselowski
go back to...
and Busch hate each other so much? Because they're that competitive.
All right, here, I want to go back to something real quick. We were talking about Shift Cup guys being trucks or Xfinity, and here's what our old colleague Mike, and I don't mean old as in age. Former colleague Mike Perricone said stats. Cup guys shouldn't be in trucks or Xfinity. I said, explain why. He said, prime example, Kyle Busch. Major leaguers don't go to lesser leagues unless they're hurt or injured. And Busch takes point spots from the regulars. Example, Stewie would have got 4 points in trucks last week if Kyle was not in the field. Christopher Bell won 7 races last year, he thinks. And he's got a point. And we've raised this point. We raised this point with stats last year about this very same issue. And he's absolutely right. When these cup guys go down into series, they take points away from the regulars. It's not fair to the guys that are there every week, busting their ass and doing what they got to do. And they run well, and then Kyle Busch comes in and stomps the entire field. I think what's this? They should have wrecked Busch this weekend. Yeah, it would have pissed a lot of people off, but guess what? There probably would have been a lot of people happy.
Yeah, Johnny Sauter said that he was literally going to try and wreck Kyle Busch. I thought that was awesome. That's what NASCAR needs right there. They need some of that. They need Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski racing side by side. And they need Johnny Sauter saying at the end of the race that he should have wrecked him.
They need a defined good guy and a defined bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke on this last week or the week before. NASCAR does not have that. The last time they had that was Dale Earnhardt and Jeff Gordon. They don't have that anymore.
The only real rivalry in NASCAR is Brad Keselowski and Kyle Busch. Argue it. Is there another bigger rival than those two guys? And look at Keselowski versus the rich boy. You know, you look at their lives, they're almost complete opposites, but they're driven by one thing, and that's to win.
Kenseth Logano little beef there was kind of interesting there for a minute.
And unfortunately, like they said in Unrivaled, sometimes the spark either goes away or one of them steps away from racing. And, you know, Kenseth and Logano can't be very good rivals if Kenseth's not at the racetrack every week, right? So Logano's going to have to find him somebody else that's going to push him, you know, because obviously Kenseth pushed him pretty hard. And look, we know this to be a fact. Joey Logano was obviously resentful towards that 20 team, so every time Joey got around that 20 team, what did he want to do, guys? He wanted to beat them, right? This is the character of a race car driver. I'm in compliance with you guys. I like the drama. I like the willing to race. You know, one of the things that upset me last year was Kurt Busch when he said, "How's Harvick going to race me like that? I thought we were teammates." Look, it's for a playoff point. Of course, they're gonna race you. I think that just shows if Johnny Sauter would have went out there and wrecked Kyle Busch, would we have opened the show with a Jimmy Johnson, or would we have opened the show with "Can you believe Johnny Sauter"? which one would have started the show off, Jimmy Johnson or Johnny Sauter wrecking Kyle Busch in the truck race? I guarantee you, I know the headline for our show if that it would have happened.
Oh God, yes. Oh God, yes.
So Kyle Busch, since we're talking about that real quick, I want to make the statement. Kyle Busch made a statement at the end of the truck race, and I think it was pointed towards his employee by the name of Todd Gillian. Being that Harrison Burton, his fast track to success has been pretty fast. Okay, he's coming up through there pretty fast. He's finished what, second and first. The last two weeks. No, did he? Who won at? No, he didn't win at Daytona. But anyway, Harrison Burton. Okay, 1-2. That's how I read it. 1-2 was Kyle Busch and Harrison Burton. Todd Gillian, on the other hand, he has struggled. Is Todd fixing to get the hook here? Because obviously Kyle Busch said we've given Gillian plenty of chance, and he needs to perform now. Basically, he was giving warning to the Gillian team: either step it up or step out. There's really no in-between. Have they given Todd Gillian a long enough leash? Should he be bringing in better results? Obviously, it looks like all Todd Gillian does is wreck trucks.
Well, you know, how long are you gonna put up with that? How long are you going to put up with watching your trucks get smashed week after week after week and not call out the driver? I mean, would you allow it? I might let
that's it. David Gillian and Natalie Decker, and both of them were not competitive this past weekend. So you have to wonder, is Gillian getting the same truck that Kyle Busch is getting? Because there's two other trucks coming out of the Kyle Busch stable that are under DGR Racing that are prepared at Kyle Busch Motorsports. And both of those trucks didn't look competitive at all throughout the race, and neither did Todd Gillian. So is this Kyle Busch being the big-headed owner, or is there some actual fact that Todd needs to step it up because he is in top-tier equipment, and Kyle Busch has sponsors that he's got to please, man?
Well, and then, you know, we can go one step further. We all remember when Kyle Busch used to go on his tantrum, to which he still does occasionally, but same thing. He was putting Joe Gibbs into a bad light with his sponsors. So now that Kyle Busch sees what it's like from an owner's perspective, so.
Yeah, when you're in a KBM truck, you should be running up front. There's no doubt that truck that Busch was driving, it must have either had something special in it, or he's just that kind of special of a talent. Go back and watch the truck race fans, if you hadn't seen it. It's amazing. I mean, the guy goes to the high side and passes seven trucks. It's what he does in those against the little league guys is is something that we'll probably never see again because, like I said, tried to make the statement earlier, NASCAR is going to limit this. They're not going to. There's not going to be anybody else to get 50 wins in the Truck Series and 50 wins in the Xfinity Series and 50 wins in the Cup Series. We're never going to see this again.
Actually, he's got 52 wins in the Truck Series.
Wow. 52 wins in the Truck Series. A lot of those wins were with Billy Ballew, if you guys remember.
Now, here's another thing. We've talked about this before. He's closing in on 200 wins. So does that classify him stats alone as the GOAT? He's
no.
Won over three series.
No, and Kyle even said himself, I know people took a reaction to the meme earlier this week. Of course, we've discussed this many times on the show, where Kyle Busch said that my wins are more meaningful. All Richard Petty did was go beat up on a bunch of redneck hillbillies in his era. That was not true. Kyle Busch never said that. That was a NASCAR banter that put out that meme, and it just seemed to roll like cotton candy after that. That was not a real true statement by Kyle Busch. I've heard Kyle say that, look, it was a different era. I've heard the same thing that Mr. CJ Sports says and his thoughts on this as what Kyle Busch believes. It's a different era. You can't compare the two, but it's very significant that he has 200 wins. Is he the best in racing right now? I don't see how we can argue that he's not. He is the best driver out in Cup racing right now. I mean, he's the best driver. He's the guy everybody's trying to beat every weekend, right? Kyle Busch beats himself, but those guys they're aiming to beat Kyle Busch every weekend.
Well, you have to aim to beat him because until somebody proves him wrong, he is the guy to beat.
So instead of a goat, he's more like a goot, a greatest of our time, a greatest of our time. So he's a goot. He's not quite a goat, but he's definitely the goot.
There's
y'all
a
like that,
question,
didn't you?
There's a full question.
Y'all like that. I know. See, I heard the pens start writing on the paper.
Oh, yeah, that'll be a sad. So, what did you guys think of the Xfinity race? Minus the fact that it was ran in the rain, which is astronomical in and of itself.
I think that
you there?
He says he's still here. I'm trying to remember. I was at work. I watched the race, but I'm trying to even remember who won the actual race. It is drawing the blank. I know.
I believe it was Christopher Bell on outside on the portrait.
Yes. Yes, and he dominated the race as well. I like Christopher Bell. I'm not bad. I think I picked Christopher Bell to win the Xfinity Series race.
Yeah, I believe
race.
You did.
Yeah.
I believe you did.
Very, 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 very talented driver. I don't know. There's certain tracks I'm not the biggest a fan of. And Atlanta's one of them that, I don't know. I go to Charlotte all the time because Charlotte's right here. And it's not my favorite track. Like, it's so strung out, and I don't know. And so I'm not a huge Atlanta. I've been to it a couple of times. I went the year Gordon won his first championship, it would have been 95 season. It was my senior year, and he pretty much just had to start the car, and he clinched the championship. Atlanta used to be the final race. And I've been to Atlanta even that far back. And it's just one of those that's just not my favorite of track. And Christopher Bell, like I say,
it's so dominant.
I can at least respect the fact that he's the Xfinity Series guy and he dominated the race. I'll give him that. Like, I just hate watching somebody dominate race to lead, like, all the five laps. Like, I mean, I like Christopher Bell, and it was a great race, but I want a little more passing.
Yeah, it's been two lackluster races in the Xfinity Series. It's kind of got me worried. We saw a lot of great racing last year in the Xfinity Series, as we most of the time see in the lower tier levels of NASCAR. But something's just not, you know, we haven't seen very much passing. We haven't seen very much side-by-side racing. I think that NASCAR's been focused on the getting the Cup Series straightened out, and maybe they need to go in and tighten some things up in the Xfinity Series because you know, when you don't have very much passing and very few cautions, the excitement level is hard to build on these races. They're going to advertise three series. They want action in three series. So I'm very disappointed with how the Xfinity Series has started out. Anytime you go to a plate track, you expect to see, you know, the spectacular. And you didn't see that at Daytona with the Xfinity cars. You didn't get that spectacular race this past weekend in Atlanta. You know, they've got some catching up to do. It's time to start entertaining the fans, especially with the two races that you got from the truck race at Daytona and the truck race this past weekend. Of course, it was great too, even though Kyle Busch kind of stole the show there. But still, you know, at least we had passing. At least we had somebody making it exciting. That's just not the case in the Xfinity Series right now. I think it's too dominated by Dale Jr. What do you think, Gus? I think Dale Jr. is just dominating the series and nobody else can compete.
What did you think about Junior? What did you think about Johnson and Johnson's debut in the booth?
Very nervous.
Well, he had a lot.
He didn't talk loud enough. Yeah, he didn't talk loud enough. He sounded like a surfer guy from California, I'll be honest with you.
Now, I think that it was funny because Harvick said that he had a sore throat and that he was losing his voice. And I remember Jimmy saying, oh, great, you're going to make me do all the talking. But you're right. Every time that I heard Johnson talk, it wasn't – he didn't command a presence that a seven-time champion you would think would command in the booth. He seemed a lot nervous.
So, very nervous, right?
You know, and you would think that, hey, you know, this should be easy peasy, but he said it himself. He had to be able – he found himself wanting to look at the track and not the monitors. So – you know, I think that, and he was up there with Harvick, who's done multiple of these. I mean, this wasn't his first rodeo either. So, I mean, it'll definitely be interesting. I'd like to see him back in it again, just so that way we can have something to talk about. But real quick, before we talk more NASCAR, I want to change gears for a second. Chris, you and I have spoke about this numerous times on Race Chat Live every week. New York State Stock Car Racing Association, something you guys don't have in Mississippi, that you said that you guys need down there. We held our awards banquet. They held their awards banquet this past weekend. And I'll tell you what, a couple of guests that we've had on this show a few times picked up a few awards. And a huge shout out to them. Derek McGrew Jr., he picked up for Award of Excellence, 17 feature wins. He got a nice little trophy or a nice little plaque. Cliff Howson, who we've had on before, he also picked up an award. So New York State Stock Car Racing Association, they do a lot. And anytime I do a benefit for a race team, which I'm doing one this weekend, for somebody we had on the show with us last year, Mike Bellinger, and I'm doing another one in March for Harry Schaefer and Mike Jackson, who we had Mike on last year. They're always giving away memberships for the year. So if anybody is listening in the New York area and you are a racer and you're not a member of the New York State Stock Car Racing Association, well, you better look into it. But they held their annual awards banquet this past weekend, and
from what I can tell, it was a hell of a turnout. So that's just awesome. It's nice to see. It's nice to see people getting recognized. They celebrate their 50th year this year, so that's cool. They were founded in 1969. Amazing. And you guys should look into getting something like this. You could call it MISCA.
Yes. We've actually had several conversations trying to get something like that together here in Mississippi as well, something that's actually official and holds the something as a record keeper, basically. Of course, we're kicking off our season. As a matter of fact, this weekend, Hattiesburg Speedway kicks off their season with the USCS Sprint Cars. Then they'll go up to Jackson Motor Speedway on Saturday the 3rd. But in just a few weeks here, you know, Why Not Motorsports Park, we roar back to life in about a month. It's March 23rd for the Battle of the States. Go out there and win that championship belt. A little bit different strategy this year. They're running quite a few one-night shows instead of three-day weekend events. Basically, practice Thursday and, you know, qualifying heats on Friday and the main show on Saturday. Well, Rodney and Phillip have decided that they want to go to a one-day show. It's a little bit less on the money side, but guys, come out and support it. It's going to be March 23rd at Why Not Motorsports Park. I'm getting excited, man. If y'all are done with your banquets up there. Huh?
That is a Sunday, is it not? No, it's a Saturday.
No, it's a Saturday. Yeah, it's Saturday.
I thought it was a Sunday.
Yeah. But, you know, we're looking forward to kicking off the year at Why Not Motorsports Park. And like I said, you know, we're roaring back to life this weekend right down here in the Dirty South. It won't be too much longer, Craig Moore. Y'all have cars on the track up there up north as well.
Yeah, it'll be opening day for go-karts is April 20th. And Fonda Speedway opens up their season mid-April, as does Glen Ridge. But that'll depend on weather and track preparation, because this coming Wednesday and the Thursday, we're supposed to get another 6 to 8 inches. Of snow. So the more snow we have, the less time they have to prepare these tracks. So hopefully the snow will let off so that these guys can get out there and get these tracks prepared and ready to go for opening season. I'll be sharing on the Race Chat Live page. The season opener for Fonda is actually set for April 20th at 6:30. So that's weather depending, obviously. But that'll be a huge night. People tend to show up for the first night because they're anxiously awaiting. I'll give you an example. 602 Sportsman, $1,000 to win. Modified is $2,400 to win. That's going to be every week. $2,400 to win. That's not too shabby. I'm sure Stewie will come in and visit us a few times next year or this season and take a few of those $2,400 checks, which will be nice. But ticket prices, I don't know what you all's ticket prices are down there, but here it's $11 at Fonda for adults and $9 for seniors. Kids 11 and under are free. If you want to get into the pits, it's going to cost you $30. If you got a pit in, if you want to do the pits and you don't have a license, it's going to cost you $35. So it's still affordable, and that's
I like that grandstand price, $11. That is not bad.
There's really not a bad
something to take note
with.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like Chaz's theory: build more seats and fill them up, and that's how you make more money for the promoter. Filling these seats, it's a problem these days. We've seen it in the top level. We've seen it at the lower level. But as you said, they found a fine medium in between big money payouts and cheap grandstand admission. How much is that cheeseburger up there? How much is the track burger, Craig?
Probably about $4 or $5.
Okay, so see there? You pay part of the track burger, but that's fine because you don't have to eat there. You can go to McDonald's before you get there.
Absolutely. Oh, no. You got to have popcorn. You got to have that stuff.
Well, that's where they get you at. You know,
yeah, well, you got to have that dirt in your burger. I mean,
right.
There's
yeah,
no
I'm
better
a nacho
taste.
Guy. I like
no,
nachos.
Oh,
I
man, you got to have dirt in your nachos.
Yeah,
hey, by the
definitely.
Way,
with
before
the jalapenos.
Before we go any further, thanks for sharing that video of you, or that video and audio of you. We'll have to share that on the Race Chat Live page. That was very good.
Are you talking about me calling the race? Yeah, I really am. I really am an announcer. I know most people are like, yeah, whatever. I'm probably not the most typical announcer that is in auto racing, but I have my own technique, and I'll be honest with you guys. I can sit there and listen to some races I call, and I don't even realize that it's me. I ask myself all the time, where did I get that from? Who's teaching me how to do this? And I also told my wife that since we have such a long off time, that even though that was the last race of the season, I had 17 races to prepare for that night.
Right.
You know, it's hard to get that rhythm back. It's when we start out and go to the first race, I'll be the worst announcer in my head than I ever was. Because I have to start all over again. You have to get up to speed. It's a lot like football, guys. If you don't go out there and you don't practice, your two-a-days and all that and get up to speed, you can't just show up to the game and expect to have a good game. You know, it's you've got to have some throwaway races there in the beginning of the season where you're getting up to speed, you're getting up to par so that you can focus on your job. A lot of it is pre-speaking of what you're about to see, you know. And so when I go back and I listen to that, you know, I know it sounded like I was bragging or whatever, but guys, you know, 7 years in, and I think I've learned a lot. And honestly, when you can go back and listen and you're like, is that really me? You know, is that really me talking? Then I think that kind of you surprise yourself on your ability. Of course, now I had Mr. James Murphy in the cockpit there with me at the Fall Classic, and that's my mentor. And any time that I'm working with Mr. James, being that he was the first one that I built a relationship with in the announcer stand, it takes me back to the beginning. And of course, I'll never be as good as Mr. James Murphy is. He's getting a little bit older now. I was able to out talk him. But he had the better puns and the better phrases there than I did throughout the night. But I was able to out-talk him this time. So I'm actually getting a slight edge on Mr. Murphy, Mr. James. But it's just an honor to be able to sit with him. Of course, you know, he was the original track announcer. And then I come in and he retired. And after working a couple of years together, him getting me off, off the ground, I kind of wonder if maybe that race he was able to sit back and say, this is my project. This is what I was able to create, you know, because when I first come there, I didn't know much. And I didn't know much about the vocabulary. I just knew how to talk. And Mr. James kind of, he made an announcer out of me. He made me a broadcaster. And throughout the beginning years when people were like, why are you calling the races? You don't have to call the races, Chris. They can't hear you and all that. I always found a reason to say, but there is somebody out there listening. And we would, you know, we have our radio network that broadcasts it to the racers there in the at the racetrack. And there's people in the press boxes, and I would always use them as the excuse. Well, they're listening to their radios in the press box, in the suites. And there could be a mom sitting in the back of the pits, you know, feeding the baby, and she can't hear the pit speakers. You know, I was doing it for them, but I really wasn't, guys. I was doing it to get better. And so, you know, years later, I get to look at that finished product, and I can't even – I hate to brag on myself, guys, but, you know, like I said, when you're in awe of your own work, you must have done a pretty damn good job.
Well, no, exactly. You know, we're never as good as we can be next time. If you want to look back, you're only as good as your last you're only as good as your last race. You're only as good as your last broadcast.
That's what scares me about the first race, right? Because I'm just coming off a great one, but there's no way that you can stay dormant for 3 months and then jump back in the cockpit and be just as good as those that have been going since February already. There's some announcers that have been at work since January. You know, I'm just now getting back to it. So I think as I get older, guys, I think it'll get easier. Just like I anticipate this show picking it back up, I kind of feel like I'm always right where I left off the last time. But you guys make that comfortable. It's not so comfortable when you're in that seat and you have all these other distractions going on. We can sit down and talk about racing for 2 hours, and it just feels a breeze. But when you're at the track and you have a microphone in your hand, and you are looking at thousands of people that are expecting, you know, a certain grade of work, there are certain words you can't use, there are certain phrases you can't say, you can't pick a fight from the media tower. You know, you have to be careful how you say, well, such and such wrecked somebody, because if you say such and such wrecked somebody, there's going to be a whole crew that is upset because you just said over the microphone that person wrecked when it was actually the other way around. So, you know, there's so many do's and don'ts, and then you have to listen to the tower. You have to communicate with the people that are in the room with you. You have to read your stats. You know, there's a lot of evolving situations going on when you're in that tower and working behind the mic. It's a lot different. This is a lot more laid back than what it is on a weeknight or a weekend night there at the racetrack when you know, I'm there to entertain 3,000 people.
Yeah, well, and that's just it. You everybody, like I just said, everybody gets better. Everything they do. I know, like you said about talking to yourself where you're practicing. I do the same thing on my way to a wedding. I will rehearse their intros because you've got to. You're like, you know, you don't want to say their, I don't want to say the wrong name. You don't want to say somebody wrecked somebody when they really didn't. Because like you said, it's going to start a fight. And
yeah, you have to be very unbiased in those situations, Craig. It can get out of hand really quickly. And it's certain phrases and stuff that you just try to stay away from, Craig. You know, you don't want to be the attention stirrer, but at the same time, I do hold firm that it is my job to speak to the crowd and through my eyes. And so there's a thin line there. You know, I've heard announcers go crazy and really create the ruckus when it was just two drivers kind of mad. But Craig, if I've got two drivers over in turn three that are busting skulls against each other's fists, I'm going to tell my fans, you know, what's going down. I'm not going to become Jim Ross all of a sudden, but I'm going to let the fans know that there's a distraction going on. There's some post-race activities. And, you know, if they didn't come here for a fight, here's a show. And this is for you. This is what you're going to go back to the Waffle House and talk about. Old Billy Bob did get out on Jeffro. Yeah, he did. He's showing up. He hit him with that Hans device. Yep. Yep, did you see his old lady jump over to race car Duke style? I sure did, and ripped them Daisy Dukes too, didn't she? Yes, she did. You know, that's the entertainment factor. But you know, you don't use that position to become the show. You are in that position to speak of the show. And I think that's where some announcers are a little bit different than me. They get a little bit bigger head. And, you know, I'm kind of more of the reserve. I do a lot of my talking and controlling the airwaves right here on Race Chat Live. And you would say, well, Chris, how do you get into that position? And I do it because, look, I'm going to tell you something, why, Craig, because I'm not sitting amongst 30 and 40-year-olds in that crowd. I'm sitting amongst 60 and 70-year-olds. And you know as well as I do, you don't speak unless spoken to.
Yeah, buddy. That's why I don't talk most of the time.
Enough about me, geez. Yeah, you should share that to Race Chat Live, and I appreciate the shout out there, Craig. But you know, it's a passion, and it's what I love to do, and it's what I call my full time job. And you know, hopefully in a few years, y'all will see me out on a tour, and I'll be rolling around with some major series. Right now, it's just about focusing on raising these kids and getting them into something. So. Not really looking to travel right now, but definitely as I get better and more demanding with my voice and calls the better races, when I start sounding like that professional, I'm definitely going to be looking to cash in on it later on as that opportunity approaches. Guys, we're into the fourth segment already. It has been a hell of a night. Race Chat Live could continue for the next 4 hours, I think. There's so much to talk about. It is the beginning of race season.
We're
going
to
Las Vegas.
7 a.m.
Yeah, we're going to Las Vegas, guys. Is there anything that we can expect from Las Vegas, or does the season begin this week? Does the season begin this week?
That's all three of my picks right there, Kyle Busch.
Kyle Busch, and Kyle Busch?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I have
wow,
to agree.
Wow, are you doing
yeah.
it too? Are you going there? I mean, because this could really be something, all three of us picking Kyle Busch for all three wins.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God, yes.
What are the odds
I mean,
of that? Of
I mean,
us all agreeing with
that...
each other. It's his hometown track, guys. What do you expect? He wants that three-peat.
Well, if he gets three, then he only needs two more.
So Ryan Preece is being left off the list. I think this is the first time ever. Ryan Preece is not on the list. Stuart Friesen's not on this list. We're actually picking who we really think is going to win this weekend, right? Kyle Busch.
Yeah, not who.
All
we want.
Weekend. It's going to be a Kyle Busch weekend. We're going to hear so much Busch that the Busch commercials are going to be annoying just because they're going to say Busch a bunch of times. So, I mean, it's a Kyle Busch weekend, huh?
Busch.
Why have they not partnered up yet? I know a candy company represents Kyle Busch, but Busch Beer has left a great opportunity on the shelf there. But not sponsored. I mean, you would almost think those two, they're even spelled the same.
Kyle Busch edition.
Busch.
Who's going to win the race this weekend? Kyle Busch.
Kyle Busch.
Why have they
because
not
they're
done
locked
it?
In. Because they're locked in with Stuart Haas. That's why.
Who's going to win the poll for the cup race? Since we're all going for Kyle Busch to pull the three-peat off, who's going to be the poll sitter?
For the truck series?
No,
I'm
just for cup, guys. Just for cup.
Oh, just for Cush. Just for
yeah.
Cush.
We'll be here all day if we do that.
Not only do I think it's three-peat, I think the truck series and the Xfinity series, I think he, like, kills everybody. I think what we've seen last week with the truck, I think that's what
think
we're going to see all weekend. I might just go ahead and go to the garage just to get it over with.
Not if Johnny Sauter has anything to do with it, obviously, because he said that for a reason. I think Johnny's not one to make a threat without the promise.
Not today, Busch.
Busch, open up a can of Busch ass.
Not today. All right, Stats is going with Kyle, too. So,
Kyle who?
But,
Kyle Busch.
All right, who I think is going to win the poll in the at Vegas? I think it's going to be Kurt Busch.
Busch. Oh, come on, man. All right, go ahead.
No, seriously, I think it's going to be Kurt.
Hey, you know what? A week off of talking crap about CGR, saying Chip Ganassi Racing wasn't up to par, they come out there and they showed that they had the speed at Atlanta. Kurt Busch was a threat there at the end. He was a threat throughout the race. Of course, Larson beat himself on pit row. He had the car to beat. That's for sure up until that point. So Kurt Busch, I mean, that's a pretty decent pick there for the poll. How about you, Mr. CJ Sports?
Oh, I'm Kyle Busch all the way. Like, I think this is going to be a ridiculous Kyle Busch kind of weekend. I think in all three, I think he
including the pole.
Yes.
Wow. I'm going with the Rocket Man, y'all. I am. I'm going with the Rocket Man, Ryan Newman. I know I feel strong about these Fords. I feel strong about where the direction that Roush Fenway Racing is going. We've seen speed from Stenhouse at Atlanta. I believe they'll be able to take those notes, at least transfer over to a good qualifying effort for Newman. If we can get these Fords fast at Roush Fenway, Newman can definitely sit on a few poles. It's been a while, so, you know, it's not far-fetched. They called him the Rocket Man for a reason. I think that he's on his farewell tour. Roush Fenway will be the last ride that he gets. So, you know, he's going to hold that breath and hold on to the floor for about two laps there and knock out qualifying. I expect Ryan Newman to sit on the pole for Las Vegas and blow everybody's mind. I mean, seriously, for the headline to be on Saturday morning, Newman sits on the pole, I think that that would bring a lot of attention to Roush Fenway Racing.
I got a question for you. How many lug nut penalties are we going to see this weekend? Because there was a couple of them.
There was, Bubba Wallace including. He got a penalty for a loose lug nut. And who else
was
it, Craig?
Matt DiBenedetto, which is the name that Mr. CJ Sports cannot say.
DiBenedetto. Yeah.
How many?
Over under three? Should we make three the over under?
Yeah, make three the over under.
I say under three.
You say under three?
Yeah.
Well, we will see. But I will tell you this: that Kyle Busch is going to have a very successful weekend.
And so many times that we all agree with each other, it turns into a disaster. So I'm actually hoping that we jinxed it by all of us. Picking him to win. I feel that even though we're all in favor of him winning, the race will work itself out, and Johnny Sauter has a threat that he has to back up. And if Kyle Busch is running up front and Johnny Sauter runs second, then at least at the end of the race, I expect Johnny Sauter to pull the old Cole Trickle and take out Russ Wheeler. You know?
I also think that if Stewie gets close to Sauter, he owes him a few. So
there is something going on between Sauter and Friesen, and I've yet to put my finger on it, but I feel like there may have been that may have been something that led into the departure of Johnny Sauter. I would hate to, you know, I'm not saying that Stewart had anything to do with that, but there was definitely some head scratching moments last year near the end of the year, the way that Friesen and Johnny Sauter raced each other. I'm wondering if that might be a rivalry brewing there. You have any insight there?
No, I don't have any insight to it. But you very well may be correct. Try to say that 10 times quick. So we'll just have to see how it plays out. For the rest of the truck season, I mean, we've got 24 races to go, so, or 26 races to go, however long it takes. So I think it's 26 or 8 weeks. Half a pregnancy, pretty much.
Well, race fans, we want to thank y'all for listening to Race Chat Live. Of course, we gave our shout outs to the local tracks that are going to be racing this weekend. If you're around the Mississippi area, of course, it gets fired up. But down here this weekend, there is a slight chance of moisture. But you know what, guys? Don't even let that worry you. Go down there and check out the USCS Sprint Cars at Hattiesburg Speedway on March 1st down in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. No telling who you'll see. They've had racers like Morgan Turpin, the fastest girl on dirt, Terry Gray, a very well-known sprint car driver. Derek Hagar could be there as well. Of course, Tony Stewart's made quite a few appearances down at Hattiesburg Speedway as well. You just never know who's going to show up. We don't know if any of these guys are going to show up, but of course we would love to see them race there, and we'd love to have you there as well. Of course, on March 3rd, Jackson Motor Speedway, and then we kick things off at Wynot Motorsports Park on March 23rd, the Battle of the States. Hope to see y'all there. Be there, as Rodney Wing would tell everybody. Race fans, we want to thank you guys for listening to the show. I think we've got some sponsors we need to thank real quick. If Mr. CJ Sports can tell us what's coming up this week on the 110 Nation Sports and the sponsors that help make this happen.
First, I want to make sure that I thank Fit for Life, Carolina Sports Plus, Maxivation Digital Media. Without these great marketing partners, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. So I want to thank them. Follow us on Twitter at 110 Nation. Like us on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Make sure you jump over and check out our site, www.the110nationsports.com. Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, we got the 110 Nation Sports Show. Got a lot of topics that I'm looking forward to jumping into. And then, of course, we got Izzo at 9:30 that will be joining me to talk about the NHL. Wednesday's kind of up in the air right now. Wednesday I will be turning 41. And
wow, you're old.
Not sure what the plans are for that night, so I'm not quite sure on that. It was one of the things I'm
happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. Presidente. Happy birthday to you.
Are you bucking for a pay raise, Chris?
I need to borrow the Learjet. We're going to the Supercross this weekend in Atlanta, Georgia. Woo!
Thank everybody. Want to thank you for that. Make sure you guys go give us a like. We are just short of 1,600. We would love to finish this month out on a good note. And go give us a like if you've not liked us already.
Real quick, before we go any further, and this is not racing related, but my son Zach bowls for the local community college, and they are getting ready to head out to Chautauqua, which is out near Erie, this weekend for a national bowling tournament for colleges. So I just want to wish them, the FMCC, Fulton Montgomery County Community College Raiders bowling team, a very, very good luck. And win, lose, or draw, they're all winners to me, but especially that redhead that bowls anchor.
That's awesome. Yep. So we'll be pulling for Zach and to try to give us an update there, especially if they're winning. But we want to thank you guys once again for listening to Race Chat Live. We'll be back on the same time next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central Time. We'll have all the results coming in from Las Vegas, including Kyle Busch's predicting headlines. Kyle Busch sweeps the weekend. I think that was a guarantee prediction there from us here at the Race Chat Live, 110 Sports Nation Network. But, guys, we want to thank y'all once again for listening, and we will be back next week. Thank you very much, and y'all have a great night. Bye.
Have a great night, everybody. Good night, everybody.